From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Selma.
Rockridge.
Tracy, California.
Noe Valley.
Everywhere, I'm homeless.
Coming up, a dance program in industrial San Francisco takes the weight off kids' shoulders.
People would say things like, black children need to be studying African dance. And I don't see the relevance of teaching them aerial work.
Then we go inside an old school cafe that's giving young people valuable life experience.
Even if I have to fire you, my heart's always open. You're always welcome to come. The love doesn't stop.
And a family conversation about the value of a traditional dance heritage.
We're Mexica danzantes of the ancestors that come from Central America and Mexico. You're always going to have that because you were raised in danza.
That's today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Well, after 40 years, the Golden State Warriors have brought an NBA championship back to the Bay Area.
What a shot! Yeah!
The Warriors beat the Cleveland Cavaliers last night, 105-97, giving them their first championship since 1975. Andre Iguodala won MVP honors for the finals. But with the team's impending move from Oakland to San Francisco in 2018, what does this championship mean to fans around the Bay? We sent the KALW News team to find out.
My name's Ibrahim Aldridge, born and raised in Oakland. I've lived here my whole life. We're basically in downtown Oakland, right where the BART stations meet. I was 1 year old when the A's won. This is the first big win for Oakland. It means a lot. Oakland's like, you know, the underdog city. We've never really been able to celebrate something positive. This is f***ing awesome. And it's good to see people not destroying shit. They're just celebrating. Lighting fireworks! They're lighting fireworks! It's awesome!
My name is Jesus Yanis, man. I'm from East Oakland, California, man. It's about the first time that we get this in 40 years. I'm a big Warriors fan. I'm an East Oakland Warriors fan. I'm a Raiders fan, A's fan. Anything that got to do with Oakland, I'm the fan, man. It feels real good because Oakland needs this. You know, we tired of having just these homicides. You know what I'm saying? It's about time to be the championship to our side. You know what I'm saying? Because we tired of these homicides. I want to bring a championship to our side, and it feels good. Hopefully, they don't go across the Bay because Oakland is the heart of the Bay.
My name's Sean Olson.
So I was born in 1984, and that's how long I've been, and we haven't been even close to a championship since I was conceived. This is amazing.
I am still in shock. I can't believe it's happening. Maybe if you buy me another drink, I will understand. Otherwise, I can't comprehend it. The Golden State Warriors are the San Francisco Bay Area Warriors. It's not the Oakland Warriors. It's not San Francisco Warriors. It's not... We are a community, you know, a bigger community than just a city.
Those voices were brought to you by KALW's Jeremy Dalmas, Liz Mack, and Holly J. McDeed. The city of Oakland will be holding a parade for the Warriors this Friday at 10 a.m. The parade will start at Broadway and 11th Street in downtown Oakland and wind its way towards Lake Merritt. To see more details about the parade's route, as well as all the streets and bus lines that'll be closed, go to warriors.com/parade. And if you plan on riding BART Friday afternoon, be prepared for some schedule changes. Go to BART.gov to get all the information. Now we'll head from Oakland to San Francisco. The Bayview neighborhood has long been known as the city's industrial hub, but it's also the home of one of the city's artistic centers. One of the longtime establishments there is a dance company that's doing things a little differently. KALW's Todd Whitney has the story.
There's a warehouse out in San Francisco's Bayview neighborhood, on Yosemite Street, just off of 3rd. It's an imposing brick building, the kind you notice once and then you don't ever really think about it again. But on the top floor, there's a two-toned space. There's the blue from the padded blue floors, and it creates the illusion that you're walking on water. And then there's yellow from the sunlight spilling in from the tall windows that line the western wall of the building, perfect at the magic hour. Inside, there's a group of young people, 6 to 18 years old, and they're climbing on pieces of welded iron that hang 3 feet off of the ground. On the ground, they run and they mess around with each other, but their joviality turns to concentration when they get up in the air. Up there, they're spinning, floating, and thriving. In a former life, this warehouse is a pillow factory, a place where dream-facilitating objects were made. But now, it's the home of Zocco Dance Theater.
I always think about this as like a place where people dream, and it has such a special energy. My name is Joanna, and I've been dancing, for 110 years.
That's Joanna Highgood. She's the creative director and founder of Zocco. And it's really more like 50 years that she's been dancing. She's a slim woman with a full-faced and frequent smile. And right now, she's sitting down with a group of kids, dancers in Zocco's youth company. They've just finished a rehearsal, and now they're sharing poems and decompressing. It's something Joanna makes sure her students do a lot. When she was 5 years old, an earthquake hit her home in Tehran, Iran. It was devastating. Joanna's father took her along as he went about town looking to help others.
At one point, we came to this small village, and there was a circle of people in the distance, and there was this really beautiful music playing, and I just wandered over there. And to my surprise, there was this gorgeous young girl, probably around 10 or 12, dancing in the center. And I was transfixed by her. I mean, I could not stop watching. It was like drinking the most extraordinary elixir. I was completely drunk with the image and the vision of this extraordinary young girl. And when I saw her, I thought to myself, that is what I want to do. That's what I want to find. That's what I want to experience.
A few years passed and Joanna's family moved to England. One of the family's new neighbors was a dancer with Barnum and Bailey Circus, a woman named Judith Holmes. She introduced Joanna to aerial expression in the form of the flying Walindas. She would sit mesmerized, watching people walk tightropes high in the air. Those performances sparked something in her. Choreography didn't have to be confined to the stage or to the floor. So it got her thinking.
Hey, why are we on the ground? Why are we stuck on the ground? Why can't we make pictures that shape this, you know, the space in a more dimensional way? And that became the impetus for pretty much the rest of my career.
Joanna grew up and she moved to the United States. She started Zocco in 1980 and the organization moved to Bayview in 1989. Shipyard jobs were disappearing. The city's black population was falling. Black nationalism was in full effect in the neighborhood.
For a long time, it was really difficult to get support because people would say things like, black children need to be studying, you know, African dance, and I don't see the relevance of teaching them aerial work.
But Joanna thought differently.
I still remember my first day with the youth company. I did not even have the courage to climb on the apparatus.
That's Azra Muhammad. She's 18, and she's been dancing at Zocco for 10 years.
To this day, I'm still afraid of heights, but Zocco gave me the confidence to be able to express myself.
Probably the most proudest moment was when it was actually her first year, actually her first maybe month or two at Zocco.
And that's her mom, Catherine Muhammad.
knowing, that she's afraid of heights and she had to overcome certain things. And when I watched her dance, it was just amazing because it didn't even look like the same person. It was like a transformation.
It's almost as if they grow several inches, you know, and all, you know, their arms get longer and they get taller.
Again, Joanna Highgood.
And they get more excited about, you know, being in their bodies.
Zako's teaching goes beyond the physical. There's also a mission to have young people take ownership over their ideas. As part of the curriculum, they read up on things like history, architecture, and social happenings.
I used to be very scared to talk.
Again, Azra Muhammad.
Just talk to anybody, really, but now I'm pretty comfortable through Joanna making us express ourselves not only on the apparatus, but also before while we're building. There's a lot of communication that goes on, so it has made me a better communicator as well.
Each year, the students focus on a different theme. In the past, they focused on the environment and police brutality. Right now, they're investigating identity, and they're defining themselves through poetry.
Who am I? Some days, I don't know. I mean, I'm always expected to answer with, I am Azra Muhammad, but what does that really mean? So far, all I got is, I am Azra Muhammad, a Muslim, daughter, friend, sister, dancer, and artist.
It's this investigation of self and possibility that Joanna Highgood is looking to provoke, to use dance and the body to instill the imagination with the ability to go beyond the mundane. Zako is a space to flex the mind and the body, a place where personalities and imaginations, they don't have to stay on the ground. They can fly. In San Francisco, I'm Todd Whitney for Cross Currents.
That story was produced for KALW's Sights and Sounds of Bayview project, which is shining a spotlight on one of San Francisco's most diverse neighborhoods. You can hear more stories like it at a live storytelling event this Friday night. Find the details at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. We'll be staying in Bayview for this next story. Cora Jean's Old School Cafe is a 1940s-themed jazz supper club run by young people. They cook homemade food, serve it, perform music, dance, and poetry on stage. Working at the cafe, they get professional skills and a support network, all while dressed in their 1940s best. Reporter Lupe Hernandez brings us this profile.
From where she's standing on the street outside Old School Cafe, Gladys Tates can see a train stop, a bus stop, and people asleep on benches on the street. Other people are drinking, drunk, or hungover. You'd never think another world was just steps away, hidden from the public, even locals.
I come to this bus stop all the time to take the bus home, and all this time, I've been over here for like 6 months, I've never noticed that restaurant.
It's a summer weeknight, and Sudeep Mochipelli Rao has just walked into Old School Cafe. From where he sits, he can see a stage to the left and tables facing it to the right.
It's really exciting. You know, you walk in and you see this dark curtains and you see this beautiful rich reds and you see a chaise lounge sofa up on top. And you hear Louis Armstrong singing in the back. And then when you come at dinner, there's actually performers. And they're singing their heart out. And you are instantly transported.
The singers Rao's describing are youth employees at Old School, wearing dress shirts and shoes with black slacks and suspenders. They carry themselves like they're out of another era, even if they're dancing and performing hip-hop. The atmosphere is a big part of what makes Old School what it is. And then there's the food. Walk through the cafe into the bright kitchen, and you'll see young people moving quickly but carefully to complete each dish on time. Helping prepare that food is Chef Kevin Tucker. He's there to help the youth develop and better the skills needed to move beyond working at the cafe.
So we, you know, look at their knife skills, we look at their chopping skills and making sure they can chop, and do they know how, you know, how to measure, do they know what a pinch is, do you know what a quarter cup is, you know, do you know what a teaspoon is?
Tucker met Old School's founder at an event and was intrigued by the new idea of youth in the kitchen.
When I got an opportunity to meet the young adults, they were all personable, mannerable. They were wonderful kids. Wonderful kids. I was pleasantly surprised.
Part of the reason he was surprised is that the youth at Old School aren't chefs in training, at least not when they come in.
I organize all the files, I do all the interviews, go through all the applications, I set schedules, and tell everybody else what to do.
Desiree Maldonado is a youth manager at Old School Cafe. She's been with the program for 4 years, since she was 15. As a manager, she's in charge of the rest of the workers as well. She says all that responsibility is a lot different from the way her life used to be.
Before Old School, I dropped out at the age of 15 and started hanging out in the streets, started drinking a lot more, and just never going home or going home at like 1 in the morning, just, you know, being really disrespectful. I used to like break into people's houses and rob my friends and rob like people, like just breaking their house and steal from them, and just go do like just some bad things. But once I joined Old School, I stopped all of it.
Maldonado says meeting Old School founder Teresa Goines made her feel like it was safe to explore a new life.
I don't know, just Teresa just felt like a guardian angel. I felt like I didn't need to go continue that life, and my friends that I was hanging around with, I stopped talking to all of them, and some of them changed with me. They joined Old School, and I was just kind of like, you know, I'm not going to do this anymore. You guys can't make me do anything I don't want to do, and I want to become somebody positive.
So I was like, okay, so jobs and a family, sense of community.
This is Teresa Goines. She got the idea for Old School after working in various jobs for law enforcement, including at a ranch for young men convicted of crimes. She wanted to find a way of getting the youth she worked with to stay out of trouble once they were released.
So that was sort of where I started thinking, all right, so nobody's going to hire them, then I need to create something that's going to hire them specifically, that could be sustainable, that can help them make more than minimum wage.
Walking into Old School may transport you to another era, but it's not always so easy for the youth to leave their old ways behind. Goines says things don't always go smoothly.
So it's still running the full restaurant with all of the challenges of teaching how do you not take out what you're upset about on your coworkers and blow up, and you're in service now. You're in customer service. So you have to check that stuff at the door and come in and be professional and, you know, how to deal with it in a positive, healthy way.
Goines doesn't try to punish the youth when they make mistakes, but she says she also enforces consequences.
If they're not ready to work on their stuff, you know, we surround them with support, and I let them know it's, even if you fail and make a mistake, even if I have to fire you, like, you know, my heart's always open, you're always welcome to come, anytime you need to talk, I'm here, you know, so the love doesn't stop, but you can't have a paying job if you choose to not be responsible and make those hard choices.
So ever since I came here, I stopped doing everything.
Leonard Ferguson is 21 and a server at Old School. He says he used to be deeply involved with drugs and alcohol, with a troubled life at home. He heard about what Old School was doing at a turning point in his life.
I slowed down on drinking, I stopped smoking weed, I stopped robbing, I stopped doing like all the negative stuff and started doing more stuff that's positive. I've been to college like a couple of years, but then I stopped going because I thought it wasn't for me. But now that I realize I want to get somewhere in life and just travel to different places, and now I'm about to go back to school probably this year, next year.
Ferguson says it's easy for him to be positive at the cafe, and it seems that way for all the youth. They make their way around tables, smiling, greeting customers, and cooking in the kitchen, and of course, performing. Whether they're on stage or in the kitchen, the youth at Old School are building new lives for themselves. The hope is they keep living them after the music stops. For Cross Currents, I'm Lupe Hernandez.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. We'll keep the music going for this next story, which comes to us from San Francisco StoryCorps. It's not always easy to pass down family traditions, especially when they don't match mainstream American culture. But that's what Maria Sanchez and Roberto Vargas are trying to do. For both, Danza Azteca, a ritualistic folk dance tradition, has been important for honoring their cultural heritage. In 2014, the couple sat down with their children, ages 12 and 14, for a talk about ethnic identity and why danza is so important to them.
My name is Roberto Ariel Vargas.
My name is Tonali Vargas.
My name is Yadira Vargas. I like to go by Chela.
My name is Maria Isabel Sanchez.
We could ask you, love, to begin the conversation. What do you identify as your ethnic background?
I still identify as Mexicana. I have not become a citizen yet. I do want to become a citizen, but I like calling myself Mexicana.
And I'm curious for our kids, since your mom and I identify differently, I identify as Chicano, Nicaragüense, Centroamericano, Nativo, Azteca, Mission District Native, all those things. How about you all? What do you all think are our family traditions that we're handing down to you?
I think danza is a big part. I don't like it. I like seeing people dance, but I don't like having to go every Monday for 2 hours in loud drumming. Sometimes it's nice to be dancing, but I don't like how we're kind of forced to do it.
And you, mijo?
I like watching it. I like the people who do it. So I respect it, and I don't mind helping out. It's just, personally, I wouldn't want to continue these for myself.
I hear what you're saying, and it's good that you're forming your own opinion, your own observations on what traditions you want. What we, as your parents, are doing now, we came into having the Danza Azteca traditions through an enlightenment of being educated around our ancestors' histories. We don't go to Catholic Church, but we go to danza. That's the way we give thanks, and that's the way we connect to our ancestors from Mexico and from Central America.
Every Day of the Dead, Dia de los Muertos, on the 1st of November, we stay up all night, we prepare the altar, we sing songs with the elders, with dancers from all over. They come together to be in ceremony with us. And then we dance as the sun is coming up. When I was your age, I guess, I had some small connection to the Catholic Church. But later in my life, you know, I found the danza.
Yeah, when I was 19, there was a lot of reflection, but also a lot of pain that needed to be processed from being brought from Mexico and my grandparents raising me. You know, I dropped out of high school and was able to get back into college, and I had to work very hard for that. And part of that was my mother seeing how hard she had to work and all the, you know, the violence that she had to go through just coming to this country, having me at age 14. There's a lot of things that go into finding my space of identity at 19.
You know, we've gone back and forth, like, wrestling with how much do we make you be a part of danza? How much do we let you do your own thing? I don't like that y'all haven't been dancing or drumming lately. I do want y'all to drum and dance again. But what I at least feel good about is that your mom and I at least gave you these traditions. And you know some songs and you know some danzas and you know how to behave yourself in the sweat lodge and you know how to behave yourself in our ceremonies and you know how to pray, you know.
We're danzantes. We're Mexica danzantes of the ancestors that come from Central America and Mexico. You're always going to have that because you were raised in danza.
That story was produced by KALW's Judy Silber. If you want to interview a loved one for StoryCorps at the San Francisco Public Library, make an online reservation. The link is at KALW.org. Click CrossCurrents. And while you're there, you can check out more stories from CrossCurrents and tell us what you think about them. Give us a call at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. You can also find us on Twitter at KALW. Our team includes Lisa Bartfy, Rachel Dornhelm, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Ted Muldoon, Emma Nobel, Jessica Plachek, Stephen Short, and Todd Whitney. Seth Samuel engineered today's show. Our managing editor is Jen Sheehan. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. The line producer was Audrey Dilling. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Country mile, country mile. This music is by American Nomad, an award-winning Bay Area Americana and folk band. You can see them live this Saturday at the 2015 San Francisco Free Folk Festival. Music goes from noon until 10 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
Yeah, the fools on the farm obey like sheep, even though what they grow they can't keep. But I'll never raise an ounce of sand. Until